Chapter 14. The Special Forces Club was in a nondescript mansion block in Knightsbridge, around the corner from Harrods. The Major wasn't a regular visitor, but he was a member, and it was a useful venue for meetings that were best kept confidential. He walked up the steps and was reaching for the lion's head door knocker when the door opened. He stepped to the side to allow two men to go past. They were in their early 30s, and he knew immediately they weren't special forces, present or former. They didn't have the cold stares of men who had been in combat, and they were both out of condition, carrying more weight than was good for them. They were wearing suits and ties, and one of them was holding a briefcase. They were laughing, and the Major could smell the drink on them. The club had been having financial problems and had widened its membership criteria to include the intelligence services and the police. Most of the members considered the drop in standards to be unacceptable, but there was no arguing with the accountants. Gannon walked into the club as the two suits headed down the road, still laughing. Mark Rennie was in the bar, a pint of lager in front of him. He stood up and shook Gannon's hand, his grip slightly firmer than it needed to be. Rennie and the Major went back a long way. Rennie had been a sergeant major, one of the best, and had left after 25 years' service. He was small and wiry, a good 4 inches shorter than Gannon, whippet thin with his head shaved. There was a small scar on his neck, just below his right ear, courtesy of a sniper in Libya, and he was missing the tip of his left little finger. Considering the hot spots that Rennie had been in during his career, he was remarkably unscathed.
"You're looking good, Rennie," said the Major. "Civvy Street agrees with you."
"I miss the adrenaline, but the money's good, boss," said Rennie.
He waited for Gannon to sit before dropping down onto his own chair. He had left the regiment 2 years earlier, but there was no way he would call the Major anything but boss, even though ranks were rarely used within the SAS, and he was no longer even serving. The Major knew that Rennie would never be comfortable using first names. A waiter walked over, and Gannon ordered an orange juice. He grinned at the look of surprise on Rennie's face.
"I'm working," he said, "and the people I'm working with don't appreciate drinking on duty."
Rennie raised his own glass.
"Well, this is one of the perks of being self-employed."
Rennie had set up his own private security firm, mainly offering personal security to foreign VIPs visiting the United Kingdom. He had been involved in several operations looking after members of the various royal families in the Arab Emirates, and had been very well regarded. Much of his work came from Dubai and Abu Dhabi. He was always busy and drew on several dozen former SAS troopers for manpower as and when needed. The waiter returned with Gannon's juice, and Rennie sipped his lager until the man had returned to the bar. He put down his glass and leaned across the table.
"So Marty Hurst," said Rennie. "What's he been up to?" "We're not sure," said the Major.
He didn't like lying to Rennie, but this was Secret Service business, and being economical with the truth went with the territory. He had phoned Rennie and confirmed that the former Sergeant Major knew Hurst before arranging their meeting. But Gannon hadn't explained why he was interested.
"When did you last see him?"
"About 6 months ago. He was looking for work, but didn't have anything for him."
"I thought the private security business was booming."
"It is."
Rennie picked up his pint glass and drank. The Major knew he was playing for time, getting his thoughts in order, so he settled back in his chair and waited.
"You never met him, right?"
Rennie asked eventually.
"He was only with the regiment for 2 years, and I was away from Stirling Lines most of that time. We were probably both there for the yearly regimental picture, but I'm pretty sure I never spoke to him. But you served with him, right?"
"In Afghanistan once, Syria twice."
He took another sip of his pint. Again, Gannon waited. Rennie put down his glass.
"It was a difficult one. Breezed through selection, fit as the proverbial butcher's dog. Took the long drag in his stride. Navigational skills second to none."
The Major nodded. The long drag was the end of the endurance phase of the SAS selection process, a 40-mile trek across the Brecon Beacons, with full kit and a 55-pound Bergen. Only the fittest of men could complete it, and while Gannon was in tip-top physical condition, he was sure that at his age he would struggle to finish.
He aced the jungle phase too. He passed selection first time and passed with honours. We thought he was destined for great things.
He took another sip of his lager.
I'm sensing a but is coming,
said Gannon. Rennie shrugged.
It was about 3 months after he'd passed selection that we realised we had a problem. He was out in Afghanistan, tasked with taking out high-value targets. He was in a couple of firefights when our boys came off worse, and in both cases, they blamed Marty.
He froze.
Rennie shook his head.
He made bad decisions. When he had to make his own calls, he was as likely to make the wrong call as the right one. He shot a civilian on one mission. Easy mistake to make. His unit was under fire, and he saw a face at a window that he thought was a shooter, and he took him out. But it was a teenager being nosy. There were no witnesses, and the unit moved on. He never put a foot wrong in training. He was damn near perfect in the killing house. But on the ground, he just made mistakes.
The major nodded. He'd seen it before. Men who were trained to perfection, who knew what they had to do and how to do it, but just couldn't function under combat conditions. The selection procedure was supposed to root out those who were unsuitable for the job, but occasionally a bad apple got through.
The thing is, he was a bloody good soldier, a perfect para. Tell him what to do and he'd go ahead and do it. But when he had to make his own decisions, his instincts had a tendency to let him down. To be honest, I think the fact he had a family was holding him back.
Wife, kids?
Wife and a daughter. Married while he was in the paras. If it was down to me, I'd never have married guys in the regiment. But it wasn't down to me.
So, what happened?
We gave him extra training, a lot of extra training. But he was sent on a mission to Syria and fucked up again. His unit had been sent in to capture an ISIS commander for questioning. They went in and for some reason Martin shot him. No need for it. The man was armed but not a threat, and his bodyguards had been eliminated. But while the rest of the unit stopped shooting, Martin put two bullets in the officer's head. A perfect double tap. But the mission was a dead loss. Literally.
And that ended his career?
Rennie shook his head again.
With hindsight, that was when he should have been let go. But he was given more training and went out on a job in Colombia, backing up a DEA operation against one of the cartels. I'm not sure of the details, but the mission turned to shit, and the DEA sent him back along with instructions that he never darken their doorstep again.
So he was RTU'd? That was what happened for the few SAS men who didn't make the grade. They were returned to unit.
Rennie shook his head again.
He was told he was being sent back to the paras, but he chose to leave the army instead. You can understand why. Being RTU'd is a badge of shame.
But there's no mention of any of that in his service record.
No one wanted to fuck him over, boss, said Rennie. He was a good soldier. He followed orders. He gave it his all. He just wasn't sass. The feeling was that the regiment was as much to blame as he was. So when he said he didn't want to be RTU'd, he was given an honourable discharge.
Rennie took another sip of his drink as he studied Gannon over the top of his glass.
How long have we known each other, boss?
He asked.
12 years, said Gannon.
Closer to 15, said Rennie. And during all those years, have I ever let you down?
Not once.
So why not just tell me what the fuck is going on and let me help you, rather than playing this secret squirrel game where you're twisting yourself in knots trying not to let anything slip?
The major sighed. Rennie was right. He was absolutely trustworthy, and if nothing else, would have signed the Official Secrets Act at some point in his career.
Fair enough, he said. But obviously anything said here stays here.
That goes without saying, said Rennie.
Gannon nodded.
Okay, here's the story. We believe that Martin is part of a group who have killed 7 MI5 officers and who are currently in pursuit of an 8th. They broke into an MI5 house in Wimbledon and killed everyone there and stole hard drives containing sensitive information. They disabled the CCTV and clearly knew what they were doing.
Rennie shook his head.
Impossible, he said. Martin is one of the good guys. He wanted to work in the private sector, but he was talking about security. Maybe contracting back in the sandpit. He wouldn't start killing for money. He's not that sort. We both know people who've gone over to the dark side, but that's not Martin.
Gannon said nothing for several seconds, then reached inside his jacket and took out the picture that Pritchard had given him of the two men in the front of the black Outlander. He handed it across the table to Rennie. Rennie stared at the picture for a while and then slowly nodded.
Fuck me, he said.